I'm Charles Wolfworth. It's Hometown Alaska. I love Alaska so much, and I love our sunshine and our springtime and all that. That it's the idea of suicide just seems at times impossible. But here's something that'll blow your mind. Alaska ranks number 2 nationally in the rate of suicides per 100,000 population. And in fact, it's the leading cause of death between ages 10 and 24, and the second leading cause of death ages 25 to 44. So this is a huge problem in our state. It's really something that we need to think about and try to address. And that's our topic on today's show. How do we prevent suicide? How do we help those who are thinking about making this terrible and irreversible mistake? And I've got 2 experts in the studio to talk about it. And there's an event coming up soon that we're going to let you know about and other resources. And of course, we will welcome your calls and emails to ask your own questions. Lisa Terwilliger is a UAA care team coordinator for the UAA Dean of Students. Thanks for being here, Lisa.
Thank you.
And Dennis Lasley is the board chair of the Alaska chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Thanks for being here, Dennis.
Thank you.
So, Dennis, I know, like me, that this is an issue that's touched you personally. And as a 911 dispatcher, it's probably an issue that you have to deal with on a regular basis. Tell me about how you became involved in wanting to prevent suicide and help people who are thinking about making this decision.
Well, you're right. It has impacted me personally. December of 2008, my best friend from high school died by suicide. It was, you know, one of those where, you know, kind of came out of nowhere. Didn't see the warning signs. Didn't see that he was struggling or that he needed help. It took all of his close friends and family completely by surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you sort of want to do something about that. And I guess you found a way to respond through your volunteer work.
Yeah, absolutely. In high school, there's, you know, 3 of us that we were kind of the 3 amigos. Mm-hmm. Sean being my friend that died by suicide. And after he passed, my other good friend, Travis, he actually kind of went into a little bit of a depression. And it was because of Travis that I actually got involved with the organization, with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. He kind of got online and did what I think most people do and start that Google search of the whys behind it, resources for coping. And he came across the organization and found out that they had a national fundraising event. Every year they do what's called the Out of the Darkness Overnight Walk. And that year it was going to be in Boston, and he, you know, called me and he said, "Hey, I think we should really do this. I think, it's going to help me on my healing journey." And I was like, "Hey, I'm here to support you. Absolutely."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we went to Boston and we participated in that event. And I mean, I was absolutely amazed, at one, how many people were there, because suicide tends not to be something that people talk about.
Yeah.
You don't realize how many people are actually impacted by it.
Mm-hmm.
But as we participated on that walk, it was an 18-mile walk. We started at 7 o'clock at night, set to finish at 5 o'clock in the morning. You know,
wow.
some symbolism on the out of the darkness. You're literally walking through the course of the evening and into, you know, into the sunlight. As we walked, we had these strangers that would come up next to us, introduce themselves. They would share their story. We'd laugh. We'd cry. And they'd walk on. And for, almost 10 hours, that is how the night progressed. And I was amazed at how these people, total strangers, were able to, band together over a common, unfortunately, a not so happy subject.
Right.
And that's kind of how...
But you're producing hope through this connection and through the sense of community, which is sort of what's the antidote, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And from that, kind of did some research back in Alaska, realized that Alaska statistically for years and years has been within the top 5. And I think that's being a little gracious. We've been within the top 2 for well over 10 years now.
So we've got to do something about this.
Absolutely have to do something. And that's when I got involved with AFSP. At that point, they didn't have an Alaska chapter. I had no idea what I was doing. I was, you know, a young kid that had passion, and that was about it. And, you know, from there, we've established a board and grown a presence across the state and participated in, you know, some capital discussions in Juneau and helped lobby to get some things passed to kind of make sure that there are resources and mm-hmm. you know, things available for those that are in crisis.
Yeah. Well, I want to turn to my other guest, Lisa Terwilliger, who does this work at UAA, and obviously keeping our students safe is really, really important. One of the things that I thought about, Lisa, and that you always sort of feel nervous about is, oh no, if we talk about this too much, it might make it happen. And you and Dennis were saying before we started that no, that's actually the exact wrong attitude.
Exactly. UAA received a Garrett Lee Smith grant that they started an integrated suicide prevention initiative in which they helped develop gatekeeper training for all of Alaskans. And they provide gatekeeper training on UAA campus through the Student Health and Counseling Center. And that's one of the things we train, is that if people are thinking about, they're already thinking about it. If you talk about it, it just opens up the dialogue to be able to talk about solutions, resources, hope for the future, instead of keeping it inside and keeping those plans going. So talking about it is really, really important. It destigmatizes it. It makes it something that a lot of people have talked about. When I came to work at UAA campus 3 years ago, I didn't realize that over 10% of college students have thought about suicide and have actively made a plan in the last year. So when I go out and educate the faculty, I tell them, you look at your class. There's 20 students in this class. Two people here have thought about suicide and thought about how they are going to complete it. So if you see any signs, let us know and make sure you provide support for the student.
Yeah. Well, I know our listeners are going to have comments and questions on this topic because it does affect so many people. And we welcome you joining us. The phone number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, the number is 888-353-5752. And email comes to us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And we'd like to hear your stories and also your questions about what can we do about this. And it's easy to feel helpless in the face of these terrible statistics, but I mean, part of the answer, I guess, is providing hope and the fact that this work that these good people are doing is making a difference. So, Lisa, tell us a little bit about the event that's happening on May 28th. It's taking place at the Beartooth, and it's a chance to spread information, or what's going on?
Yeah, so the Anchorage Suicide Prevention Coalition has put on this has been invited to put on a one-course discourse at the Beartooth on Friday, 11:30 to 1. And they'll show a short film featuring Kevin Hines. He is somebody who attempted suicide through trying to jump off the Golden Gate Bridge. And so he'll tell his story and tell how he survived and what he was thinking up to and including after his attempt. And there'll be resources from all over Anchorage, from all the different providers and volunteers who try to address suicide prevention.
So, I think that folks might be thinking, well, this doesn't apply to me, right? But it kind of applies to all of us, right? Mm-hmm. This is information we all mm-hmm. need. So when you think about who should come, everybody should come.
Mm-hmm. Just this week, I recommended it to a student who was referred to me who had been helping her friends with who had been thinking about suicide. And so she's going to bring them there. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be for people, for survivors of somebody who's completed a suicide in their family, to know that they're not alone. And the resources that they can have through South Central Foundation has a suicide survivors group, and so does the chaplains group here in town. So there's help for those who, you know, those who are left behind.
You might call the victims, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and so much to talk about, but we have a call now from Lori in Seward. Lori, did you have a question or comment?
I had a comment. Thanks for having this conversation today. But my nephew committed suicide. And one of the things you often hear people say is it was such a selfish act. And when they say that to you, it is so hurtful that someone about someone that you loved, and you just know that that's not the case.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes, for sure. There was an article in Psychology Today in May 15th, 2014, and one of the quotes out of it says, in general, people do not commit suicide because they're in pain. They commit suicide because they don't believe there's a reason to live and the world would be better off without them. So it's not selfish. It's really they're just in pain, and they don't see the hope for the future.
Yeah, and I want to throw this out to both guests. Dealing with the grief from friends of mine who have made this decision, is thinking of it as an error, like as a mistake in judgment, that if you really thought it out, and if you had clear thinking and your thinking wasn't clouded by the mental illness of the moment, you wouldn't make that decision because it's a mistake. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
would you agree with that,
yeah,
Dennis?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing that people have to remember is that when someone is in crisis, and they're in crisis at that moment, mm-hmm. they're not thinking clearly the way mm-hmm. that you or I or someone who's not in crisis would think. Mm-hmm. So in their mind, they are looking at it from this is the option. And they're not looking or they're not thinking at it from any clearer of a standpoint. So, those of us that are left behind, we're often, sit there and think about the whys behind it. And because of the fact that they are in crisis, we're never going to.
The whys will never make sense.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
Us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good, sort of removing the blame stigma is probably a really good idea for everybody involved. Is that kind of where you're coming from, Lori?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, thanks for that input. I've also got an email that's kind of on the same topic, but with a slightly different take on it that I want our panelists to respond to, because I think that it's kind of provocative. This person who wants to remain anonymous has had a couple of family members complete suicide, as we say. Mm-hmm. And she says, I'm still trying to figure out how to help my sister and her husband. They're in pieces and both dealing in different ways. My sister is a terrific group of friends and family. My brother-in-law, like most men, suffers silently. They both feel as though they failed. They have two beautiful daughters, very successful and pretty together. And her point is the guilt that the family members feel is such a heavy weight. And she says, I don't think there's a damn thing anyone can do to prevent this. I don't want to sound harsh, but after soul searching and blaming myself and everyone else, including the victim, I think we all have to face up to the fact people suffer from depression and essentially saying the idea that prevention is possible puts guilt on the family. So they should have prevented it. They should have known. I assume that since you guys are in the prevention business, you believe prevention is possible and that your intent is not to make people feel guilty that they didn't prevent. I don't know, Lisa, do you want to take that? How do we know prevention is possible, and how do we sort of make that not be a guilt thing, if you get my meaning?
Well, we know prevention is possible because people have decided not to complete suicide after they've had intervention, but just because you do everything right doesn't mean somebody's not going to complete a suicide, that it happens. But that doesn't mean you don't need to try.
Mm-hmm.
And just reducing the stigma of suicide is something that we really need to do, and focus on help-seeking behaviors, focus on that it's okay to ask for help and that there's help out there and you don't have to feel bad about it or feel stigmatized by asking for help. I feel really bad for this lady
guilt from survival.
Yeah. And we have support networks here in town that help survivors, overcome those feelings, because there's other people who are in their circumstances too. There's NAMI, which is an organization that helps people living with mental illness and helps their support network too. And the South Central Foundation has the Survivors of Suicide group. And being around people who've been in their shoes helps a lot.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. some of those resources are on our website at alaskapublic.org if you find today's show. And there's also, you know, phone numbers that folks can call, crisis lines. There's the, and I don't know if folks can pick those up as we give them right now, but one is 877-266-4357. That's a 24-hour crisis line for Alaska. Dennis, you remarked on the impact that your friend's suicide had on you. Talk a little bit about dealing with this sense of guilt that we have when this has happened, and how do we get beyond being sort of frozen by that, right? And by the sense that, like, it's our fault somehow.
Right. Well, the thing that everyone has to remember, and she kind of, hit the nail on the head there with, you know, both the husband and the wife that are, you know, left dealing with the tragedy of the suicides. Each person grieves in their mm-hmm. own way. And there really is no wrong way to grieve. Mm-hmm. It's okay to have feelings of guilt. It's okay to have feelings of anger. It's okay to have those. You just have to remember to try and, you know, continue to move yourself forward one step in front of the other. And I mean, as cliche as it may sound, over time, you know, things will heal. You know, make sure that you have a good support network. Make sure that you have a good, you know, safety net out there. If it means that you find some kind of an activity that occupies your mind, obviously we want it to be a healthy activity. Mm-hmm. But some kind of, what we refer to in the business, self-care. Some kind of self-care that'll kind of move you through that tough time and, you know, let you realize that there is hope, there is healing. And it's, again, for each person, it's just... it's different. It's right. unique.
And from the point of view of the rest of us in society, we can think about how do we avoid sort of casting blame or making mm-hmm. the parent feel like it's their fault or doing mm-hmm. those maybe subtle statements or reactions that sort of mm-hmm. suggest that because mm-hmm. it's not the parent's fault.
Oh, absolutely right. not. And you know, kind of going to the blame thing, you know, I always like to make people think of, you know, other analogies. So let's take, suicide. For one, we know is 90% of those that die by suicide have either a diagnosed or a diagnosable and treatable mental health disorder. With that said, let's take a look at cancer. We know that there's a lot of money and research that's being spent with cancer. Ultimately, we're trying to make sure that no one dies by cancer. With that said, are we going to have those same thoughts and feelings and say that cancer is not preventable? No, absolutely not. We're going to be 100% optimistic and say we can find a cure for this. We can make sure that people get the resources things that they need. Circling that back around to suicide the exact same way. If we educate ourselves, if we make sure that we're available to people who are in crisis, to make sure that they know that there's someone out there who does care about them, that you are available to speak with them. I mean, it's a huge step in the right direction.
That part.
And then you're not afraid to talk about it either, mm-hmm. you know? And when I do, I'm a certified gatekeeper trainer. And so when I do the trainings, we often talk about people who are in crisis or are depressed or in the state that they're in. They think they're telling the whole world that they have a problem, and they may only be saying something that sounds innocuous, like, I'm not going to be here tomorrow. Well, what does that mean? I'm not going to mm-hmm. be here tomorrow for lunch, or I'm not going to be here tomorrow in this world? And you have to ask to clarify that.
Mm-hmm. When you pick up a little signal, you go for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to talk more about that, but I also want to make sure that folks know we welcome you to get on the show with us. It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. My guests are Dennis Lazy, who is the board chair of the Alaska Center for the of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and Lisa Terwilliger, who is the care team coordinator for the UAA Dean of Students. And you can join us by calling 550-8433, 550-8433. Questions or comments are welcome. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And email is a great way to get on the air with us with your question, hometown@alaskapublic.org. Let's get into some practicalities here of what we as individuals can do. You're starting to get into it, Lisa, about listening, right? What are some of the warning signs that, that people should be aware of? And sort of what are the things we need to be doing when this sort of situation is taking place? Who wants to take that one first?
I'll defer to Lisa on that one with her gatekeeper training that she has.
All right. Great. Well, there's a lot of different warning signs. It could be anything from not showing up to work to, you know, being disheveled, giving away things, preparing for the future in a way that looks odd, like giving away all your possessions. But there's no one sign either that somebody might be thinking about suicide. It's they generally do talk about it, but it can be innocuous. And so you really need to ask the question, because they think they're saying more than they are. They, when you're in that state, you think everybody is aware of what's going on with you, and they're not. So being ready to ask the question, talk about it. Are you thinking about killing yourself? You're not going to plant the idea in somebody's head. And if it's not true, if they're not thinking about it, they'll correct you. No, why would you think that? You know, they'll tell you.
And I just want to interject real quick with that, with what Lisa said. Are you thinking about suicide? Are you thinking about killing yourself? You have to. I mean, it may be difficult for someone to ask that question, because inside, when you ask that, you're secretly hoping that their answer is going to say, you know, no.
Yes.
But by asking that, you're letting them know that you're here to speak to them. You're here to help them, to have a conversation. But the thing that you have to make sure that you don't do is you can't say, are you thinking about hurting yourself? Because for someone that's in crisis, that's having thoughts of suicide, they're not going to answer that with a yes. They're going to say, well, no, I'm not thinking about hurting myself. I'm thinking about killing myself. Two entirely different things. So when it comes time to ask that question, don't be afraid to be frank. Ask it. I know if someone were to ask me that question, I would not be offended, upset, hurt that they asked me that. It'd be, wow, this person cares about me.
Exactly.
I'm glad that they asked that.
Exactly. I have a situation at UAA when I first started working there. A student posted on Facebook that they were thinking about dying, killing themselves. And it came to me a couple days later, and I called the student up right away, because you take that seriously and you act on it right away. And when I called the student, she said, I posted this on Facebook. Why didn't anybody do anything? Why didn't my friends call me? And I said, you know, a lot of times this is really uncomfortable for people to talk about. They don't know how to approach a person. But you just approach it just like that. Are you thinking about killing yourself?
So don't don't assume that it's just a figure of speech, right?
Right.
Don't assume that they are just, if they are throwing that language out there, then you need to pick up on it. So what about, the other thing, and just taking the perspective of sort of the audience member here, is if someone is behaving oddly or shows a little bit of a personality change or just seems down, it would seem like maybe a bit much. They could be offended if I pick up on that and say, are you considering suicide? When really they're just having a bad day, right? And that might be like, I might want to sort of ease into it and say, how are you doing today? You know, how are you feeling? I mean, is it sort of like just that kind of connection good enough? Or do you just sort of go right for the question? Do you get what I'm after?
I think it's kind of a totality of circumstances. If yesterday this person was super chipper, their normal self, you know, bouncing off the walls with energy. Everyone looks at them and like, wow, how do they have that much energy? How do they look so happy? And then, you know, tomorrow when you see them, it's, you know, they're obviously having a down day. I don't know, even with all the training and everything that I've had, I don't know if I would connect the dots on from day one to day two to say, obviously this person is in crisis. I need to ask that question. I think it's more so, you know, kind of looking at a pattern a little bit over a couple of days.
Kind of tuning into the people around you and sort of having, not being afraid to be intimate with them, right?
Yeah,
not
absolutely.
Being afraid to reach out and sort of talk about what their life is all about and whether life is going the way they want it.
And then still have, you know, some of those questions, maybe not ask that pointed direct question of, are you thinking of suicide? But, hey, you look kind of down today. I mean, well, you know, what's going on? I mean,
wouldn't the world be a better place if we just did that all the time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, yeah. you have friends for a reason. You should treat them like friends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was a time at UA campus when there was a student in the university center, and she was sitting in a public spot and crying. And the director of student health and counseling got a phone call. What do we do? Well, go up and ask her what's wrong. And they did, and found out her father had a really serious diagnosis, mm-hmm. and she was crying over it. And that's when people want to talk. So don't be afraid to enter somebody's life,
absolutely.
What it's about.
So let's take it to the next step. Suppose the crisis is actually now, and there's been an actual threat made, or you have the sense that something's actually happening. I mean, Dennis, why don't you take this one? Like, what? Mm-hmm. I mean, call 911, right?
Yeah,
or what do you do?
Well, so I would say, ultimately, 911 is absolutely a resource. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are a little hesitant of calling 911 because ultimately, no, the police are going to be involved. Depending on the level of crisis that person's in, it could result in, you know, that them having handcuffs put on them and transported to a hospital for an evaluation. So depending on the level of crisis with that individual at that moment, another option would be utilizing those care lines, whether it's the state care line at 1-877-266-4357, or if it's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255. If you're here in Anchorage, the local crisis center, 563-3200. Those are great places to start, because you can put it on speakerphone. You can have that conversation with, mm-hmm. hey, I'm here with my friend. This is what's going on. Mm-hmm. He just needs someone to talk to. And then they're trained to have those conversations. Now, if it is a level of crisis where you're thinking that there's imminent risk, I mean, if he has, a weapon on him or he or she has a weapon on him making those threats, medication, threatening, then absolutely 911 and the police will respond and kind of do an initial assessment and determine that threat level. And if what they have observed rises to having to transport them for, an eval at Prof Psych ER or API for those locally here in Anchorage, then ultimately that's what they'll do.
Right. And we're not talking about them being arrested or being in trouble. It's that they're being taken for their safety.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So a situation like where somebody says, "Well, I'm going to kill myself," and walks out the door and you can't find them, that would be where you call 911.
I'll call 911 immediately.
Yeah. Okay.
And also, Lisa? if you're concerned about somebody, you haven't heard from them and you know that they've had a really difficult time, you can also ask for a welfare check from the police. You can call 786-8900 and you can talk to the dispatcher and tell them you're concerned for somebody. A therapist do this all the time. I've done it before too. When I can't locate somebody and they have said something concerning, and then you give the address and the police will go and check their residence.
Right.
And then with the police component, I just wanted to add something. Across the state, police officers, not all of them receive it, but there is a CIT or crisis intervention team training that officers can go through and dispatchers. It's a 40-hour course training where it teaches them the good foundation of how to interact with people who are in crisis. So if you happen to call 911, you can always ask for a CIT dispatcher. If they have one available, they do their best to accommodate. You can also ask for whatever police officer that comes to be a CIT police officer. Again, if they have one available, they do the best that they can to accommodate. Unfortunately, not always is one on shift. Or if it's a level of crisis where response is now, there may not be one available, but it's still something that you can ask for.
Yeah. And in the second half of the show, I want to talk more about what we can do sort of societally, like as a whole state, to address this, and also maybe a little bit of why we feel it's such a problem in Alaska and why the seasonal aspects of it. So we have a lot more to talk about in the second half. Before we go to that, Lisa, let's give the information one more time about the event. And this is coming up day after tomorrow, right?
Friday. Yep, Friday.
So this weekend, Friday, mm-hmm. It's a time to take your lunch hour and go over to the Beartooth and learn more about our topic. Lisa, can you give the details?
Yes, it's on April 28th, Friday at 11:30 to 1, and it's the theme is Every Life Matters, awareness event for the community. There'll be a short film, and there'll be question and answer time, and there'll be lots of resources set up.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, stick with us. Dennis Leslie is the board chair for the Alaska Center of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, Lisa Terwilliger, UAA Dean of Students Care Team Coordinator. We are going to be back after a short break with more of Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
It's Hometown Alaska, and our topic today is a big one, a heavy one, suicide prevention. And we are talking about the need for everyone to be aware of this. And there was recently a audio report that was done on NPR's Morning Edition on this topic, having to do with female veterans and the very disturbing statistics that affect them. So we're going to go to that now, listen to that, and then we'll come back to our guest in the studio to talk more.
And now let's talk about a painful statistic. 20 veterans commit suicide each day, according to the Department of Veterans Affairs. That rate is somewhat higher than suicide among civilians, but female veterans have a rate between 2 and 5 times higher than civilian women, and the number has grown steeply over the past decade. As NPR's Quill Lawrence reports, there are just no easy explanations.
It seems like a contradiction. Suicide is rising, but it's so rare that it's hard to study.
We can't ask deceased people about what factors might have led up to the completion of suicide.
Lindsay Ayer studies military suicide at the RAND Corporation.
The completion of suicide is overall rare in the general population. And so we can talk with people who have attempted suicide or have thought about suicide.
Those aren't always the people who end up actually killing themselves, but it's as close as you can get. When RAND wanted to glean what they could from female vets who have thought about suicide, the obvious place to go was Canandaigua, New York. That's where the Department of Veterans Affairs runs one of 2 call centers for the Veterans Crisis Line. The hundreds of operators there may be the largest pool of knowledge about what brings female veterans to the edge of suicide.
She had her weapon and barricaded herself in the bathroom, would not leave, and had a loaded gun and said she was going to kill herself.
Latrice Titus, an Army veteran, has been answering phones here for 4 years.
She wanted me to make calls to like her mom and her siblings and so she could say goodbye. And I told her, no, because you're going to live today, so there's no need to say goodbye, you know, and let's just focus on you staying safe.
Titus says women call with the same issues as men. Post-traumatic stress disorder, financial stress on top of loneliness and depression. The end of a relationship or a custody battle can be a trigger. She says female veterans have their own issues as well. Many VA clinics are less than inviting for women, or they find themselves the only female in a group therapy session. Not ideal, says Latrice Titus, because a common issue for women who call the crisis line is rape and the way the military handles it.
Talking about military sexual trauma, females often do not report it because then they're looked at as, oh, you are the barracks whore, or no one's going to believe you, or it'll get investigated and you'll still get in trouble.
And so I think that that's re-traumatizing when you have to live with that the rest of your life, that this happened to me. And a lot of times it turns into a crisis because there's been no justice.
Danielle Simpson also works at the crisis line. She's heard about sexual assault from women and men. She says less traumatic issues can build up. The transition to civilian life can be overwhelming.
This winter, I spoke with a female veteran who She had been in Afghanistan, seen combat, and so she was really dealing with a lot of PTSD. And then coming home and being expected to be the soft, caring, warm mother and wife that she was expected to be in civilian life. And she was really struggling with that transition.
The stress may come from different places for male or female vets. There's one thing they have in common, though: guns. Kelly Lannon is an Iraq vet who works at the crisis line.
You know, women in the military, they are trained just like the men are to use guns, how to use them properly. I think that they're less scared of guns than maybe a civilian would be because they have such significant experience with it.
Civilian women usually favor pills, which take time and aren't always fatal. Female veterans are about 33% more likely than civilians to use a gun, according to VA statistics, and that number has grown in the past decade. Guns are instantaneous and much more deadly. Quill Lawrence, NPR News.
And that report came from Morning Edition, airing here on KSKA from NPR. This is Hometown Alaska. We're talking today about suicide prevention, and we're welcoming your calls and questions. I'll give the phone number out in just a moment. In the studio, I have Dennis Lasley, who is board chair of the Alaska Center of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and Lisa Terwilliger, who is the care team coordinator for the UAA Dean of Students. My name is Charles Woolforth. If you'd like to join us, the phone number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. There was this discussion about guns on the report we just heard, and that the fact that different methods have different levels of lethality, right? And so the availability of guns, is that a contributor to suicide or to the lethality of suicide? Did either of you want to take that? Dennis?
Well, statistically
speaking, over 50% of suicides are with a firearm. So it's absolutely accurate to say, you know, lethality matters. Especially if you take a look at the state of Alaska, we are a very pro-gun state. Our rates are even higher than 50% when it comes to suicides.
Mm-hmm. Is that a reason why our statistics are so bad? This material I have here says that we're more than three times as likely to die by suicide in Alaska than by homicide. Just a very, very high numbers, and as you said, near the top of the list for the states. Is that sort of the fact that we have a gun culture? Almost everybody has one. Is that a reason for that, that statistic?
It could play a factor. You know, access to lethal means is a contributor to suicide. If you have a lethal mean that's readily available, and if you're in that moment of crisis, and that's what you grab or go for, then absolutely it can contribute and create that higher statistic. That's why it's so important that when someone's in crisis, you determine if there is access to lethal means, and if there are, you do what you can to try and remove either them from those lethal means or those lethal means from them.
Get those guns out of the picture.
Absolutely.
Which could also mean prescription medication that's in your cupboard, too, because there's a lot of means that can happen rather quickly, not as quickly as a gun, but that are just readily available in your medicine cabinet.
Right.
Which brings me to the fact that the hospitals in around the city, Nixle put out a report that they're going to take extra prescription medications here soon this month. So it's now is a good time to clean out your medicine cabinet.
That's a way to get it off your hands. Yeah, yeah. Because I guess you're not supposed to flush it down the toilet anymore because it goes somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Lisa, tell me a little bit more about the community-wide efforts to address that problem of suicide, the Suicide Prevention Coalition, and the trainings that are available.
Yeah, so I came not just as a representative from UAA, but as a member of the Anchorage Suicide Prevention Coalition, which is an active community member working group of volunteers. We meet every third Thursday of the month at the Chris Kyle Patriot Hospital on DeBar. or is that Braga?
I can't remember. Braga.
Braga. Thanks. And we're people who we may have it part of our jobs, or it may be an interest of ours to educate the community on how to promote hope and solutions to the community. And so we get together and we talk about free trainings. We many of us are certified in different types of suicide prevention. So like I said, I'm certified in the Gatekeeper Training Program, which is an hour and a half training. We have Safe Talk, which is a two-day training.
Safe Talk is a four-hour training, and I'm actually certified in the Safe Talk training.
Mm-hmm. And there's Assist that is trained through South Central Foundation, and there is also QPR, which Eric Boyer, who's the head of, who coordinates the Suicide Prevention Coalition, is trained in. And many of us on our own time will come to your agency. We'll come to your church. We'll come to your group, a book group, the Rotary. Downtown Rotary had all of their members trained in suicide prevention last year. So we will come to you. South Central Foundation makes a commitment that they train every month.
What's the training going to do for you? Is it going to just make you more aware, or what's the goal of it?
The goal of the training is to make you aware of like signs and symptoms, but also how to help somebody with a safety plan, how to give help them with hope for the future, how to talk about it without stigma. You know, just being able, we practice a lot, just asking each other back and forth, are you going to kill yourself? Mm-hmm. You know, because just having practiced that, you're more likely to be able to ask it when you need to.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Lisa hit it right there. I mean, in addition to all those other fantastic things that it does, it gives you, that person that attended that training, the confidence to have that conversation with someone, to mm-hmm. ask that difficult question of, are you thinking of suicide? Are you thinking of killing yourself? And knowing that even if they answer with a yes, you are prepared mm-hmm. and able to go to that next step after.
The next mm-hmm. thing to say. Mm-hmm. So, Dennis, would you say from your perspective of trying to deal with this sort of a statewide basis, that this kind of training and awareness is the biggest, best tool that we have, or the best solution, if you will?
Absolutely. You know, going back to, you know, me with my, you know, my kind of analogies that I like to go with. Let's take a look at drunk driving. Back in the 70s, was it a common practice? Absolutely. Were people picking up the phone and calling the police department saying, hey, there's a drunk driver? No. Were there, you know, PSA campaigns on the television? No. You know, fast forward to the 80s, maybe kind of saw a little bit, you know, to the 90s, to the 2000s. And now we have PSA campaigns galore saying, hey, this is, you know, this is not smart. You're going to get arrested. You know, we have signs posted up and down the Glen Highway, the Seward Highway with the ready drivers, you know, report every dangerous driver immediately. So that campaign right there, because of the fact that they got out into the community, educated, provided, you know, resources, there's been a sharp decline in, you know, accidents
kind
caused
of about
by
changing the society and changing people's expectations and what they think is how we do things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. in this case, it's more about opening folks up rather than mm-hmm. saying not doing something. It's about doing something, which is mm-hmm. just reaching out to each other and being good friends mm-hmm. And being good family members.
There was an article in the ADN May 23rd, 2014. And it talked about Scammon Bay, and they had several suicides in that village, and they decided as a village they wanted to do something different. So they started, the title is It Takes a Village to Teach Hope in Scammon Bay. And they did a natural helpers program district-wide that taught students, parents, community members, the signs of depression, and the resources available. And then they went 3 years without a suicide. Hmm. So it's really important that the whole community knows what the resources are, that you can actually know that somebody's going to help right. you when you need it.
Now you're giving me hope about this problem. Mm-hmm. There's something we can do about it. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Sean, who's calling from Anchorage. Sean?
Hi. Yeah, long-time listener, first-time caller. Thanks for doing this this program. It's really hit home for me lately. I've I don't know if any of you have watched the recent Netflix series, 13 Reasons Why.
Yes, yes.
Kind of puts in perspective some of the things that victims of suicide go through. Myself, when I was in high school, a friend came to me saying that they wanted to commit suicide, and I don't remember the content of the conversation, but this person is still around today, so I hope that they, you know, they found the help that they needed. I just wanted to reiterate the importance of talking, you know, to these people who you see are affected, and you know, it doesn't take much to put someone over that edge and make that final choice.
Or to pull them back from it, right?
Exactly.
You know, it could just take sort of like a little kindness and connection.
I'm Lisa? So glad you brought up that 13 Reasons Why Netflix series, because just recently on UAA campus, we responded to a student who was suicidal who brought that up. That's what she was watching when she was thinking about completing her suicide. And the Jed Foundation has talking points that will counter everything that's in that Netflix series. So what that Netflix series
is... I don't know what you're talking about.
I know the Netflix series. I haven't seen it, but we just talked about it in our Suicide Prevention Coalition meeting. It's a very popular series on Netflix where a girl who completed a suicide sends audio tapes to the 13 people she blames for her suicide. And why she did complete her suicide. And it's everything you don't want to have as a message about suicide. and it breaks my heart. So
that was
just mentioned when the residence life staff responded to a student who was thinking about that, and she brought that up, and we hadn't heard about it until then.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, let's get back. I mean, it brings us back to a point we made earlier, which is that it's an irrational decision. You're not doing it because you've got 13 good reasons. You're probably doing it because of reasons that don't make any sense.
And on the UAA campus, the Native Student Services Department does a yearly Reasons to Live walk, and we also have a Helper's Hill during Suicide Prevention Month early on in the semester, where we have students, they identify people who have helped them, or you know, even animals, you know, their pets who've helped them make through a hard time, and they put it on a flag, and we put the flags in the Cuddy Quad, and that's what we want focus on. We want focus on who can you turn to for help when you need it, and so these lines that we're talking about, the care line, is not just a crisis line for suicide. It's a helpline for if you're in distress and you don't know who to talk to in the middle of the night at 1 o'clock in the morning, you can call them. You don't have to be suicidal. You can call them just to talk.
If you feel alone. Yeah. So Sean, when your friend came to you, was your, how did you respond? Did you just listen, or what was your...
I listened to what they had to say, and you know, tried to give what I thought. I mean, I was 15 at the time. I'm 27 now. Tried to give what I thought, you know, they might need to hear, because they were a really good friend of mine and everyone else on our sports team at the time, and it hit me out of left field. So I did my best to to kind of talk them down and kind of figure out why and listen to why they wanted to, you know, to make that choice. So,
yeah, that's all you can do, I guess. Just do your best. Well, thanks for the call, Sean. If others want to get on the air with us, we have a few minutes left. The number is 550-8433, 550-8433. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, it's toll-free at 888-353-5752. And the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. You're listening to KSKA, Hometown Alaska. Lisa Terwilliger is here, who is the care team coordinator for the UAA Dean of Students, and Dennis Lasley, who is the board chair for the Alaska chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I wonder if this is an issue where we can hope for a solution, or if this is an issue where we're just trying to be as caring as we can and mitigate it as much as we can, knowing that it's something that will always exist. And I think that sometimes, and we are always wanting to get like the, we don't want to try anything unless we can completely solve it. But that's really not what we're after here, right? We're just sort of after being kind, being connected to people who might be ready to make this mistake and help them not make the mistake as individuals. So one at a time. I mean, you would respond to that, Lisa?
Well, I think you can have a community culture where you you have a culture of hope, mm-hmm. too. So it's not just individual purpose. It's knowing that there's a community out there like Scammon Bay. They decided their community was no longer going to be identified by suicide. They're going to be identified by hope. Mm-hmm. And you can do that as a community, a church community, you know,
right. So you don't have to do it for the whole state. You can just do it for your group.
Your local community. Mm-hmm. And that spreads, and that message spreads that there are reasons to live and there is hope. And if you have trouble and you're thinking about killing yourself, there are resources that you can turn to, and mm-hmm. you can turn to your neighbor and they can help you with those, find those resources in a dark time. And so, yes, we want to cure it. But the whole point is just keep moving forward towards solutions
with each person. Yeah. Dennis, mm-hmm. do you feel the same way?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I think, you know, as humans, we get, you know, too obsessed with the big picture. Mm-hmm. And I think with this one in particular, we really need to kind of take a look at the small picture. Every life matters. Yes. One life saved is amazing. Mm-hmm. And just always have that in the back of your mind, that one conversation that you had, it could save a life. And just don't get too concerned on the big picture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in how you feel about the larger kind of culture and media, and the way messages are coming down to us. We talked about this Netflix series, which sounds like a really negative influence. Another thing there's been a lot of talk about is medically assisted suicide for people or end of life, you know, and do in some ways, and also all the horrible stuff that's available on the internet, not necessarily from Netflix, but just that you can find on YouTube, and which seems in some way to sort of cheapen and make these kinds of decisions easier. I feel like a lot of the media that we're receiving now is really counterproductive to sort of mental health and to in this issue in particular. I wonder if you feel that way, Dennis.
Absolutely. I mean, you take a look at, you know, what's available at your fingertips these days. We have been so enamored with all of these negative messaging, all of these unsafe messaging, to the point to where we're desensitized to it. And because we're desensitized to it, it impacts us in a different way than, you know, 20 or 30 years ago. I mean, movies, the gore, the graphic, the things that they would even, you know, consider these days versus back then. It's a huge contributor.
Well, yeah.
And even Malcolm Gladwell talked about it in his book, Tipping Point. He talked about the contagion effect of suicide. So, you can contagion hope too. So I just want to say that that's what we're here for. Hope for the future, hope for our community, hope for the next person that you encounter, that mm-hmm. you can make a good connection with them and let them know that you care about them. I wanted to highlight a couple things too, other than just the One Course Discourse. We have three other events coming up in the next month and a half that have to do with suicide prevention and hope. There's the Out of Darkness Walk, which will be happening on May 20th from 10 to 12 p.m. on the Park Strip. And there'll be lots of resources there of people who and organizations who provide suicide prevention training.
I guess here in Anchorage, you don't have to do it at 5 in the morning like
no,
you did.
No, you don't.
The sun's always up.
We've scaled it down to a more manageable community-based event. It's still very well received. We have a lot of people that show up to support it, whether they've been impacted by suicide or whether they're to support the cause.
And it was very inspiring mm-hmm. for you, wasn't it?
It absolutely was. Yeah. And my hope is to kind of take that national event that we had and kind of duplicate that hope and let people mm-hmm. know that there is hope out there, that there is a light, and as Lisa said, the community support services that we have there as well, And it is a free event. It is our signature fundraising event for our organization, so we do encourage people to fundraise. But we would rather have you be there and not provide anything than not show up because you're afraid that you can't fundraise. So come out, have a good time, and be inspired by the community.
Mm-hmm. And what was the date of that again, Lisa?
May 20th, 10 a.m. to 12 a.m.
All right.
And then the Alaska VA Women's Veterans Spring Event is happening on April 29th, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And it's a free seminars and classes for mental health and physical health open to the public. And also the Alaska National Guard is partnering with the Alaska chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention to promote SAMHSA's Prevention Week, May 14th. Through May 20th, and on May 19th, they're having an event on the Alaska National Guard Armory with a health fair from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
All right, lots of stuff going on, and I'm sure you can find out about all that at the event on Friday, too. So Friday event is at 11:30 at the Beartooth. It's film and tables and lots of information. So it's a one-course discourse. It's an opportunity to go have lunch and learn all about this at the Beartooth Theater Pub there in Spinard. So just with a couple of minutes we have left, I'm interested in from both of you, I guess what's the one thing that you would like to change about our culture, about our behavior to address this issue? I mean, what's your main message, if you could sort of get it across to everyone? And Dennis?
I think the biggest message that we have to take away is, as Lisa said, there's hope. There's hope, there's resources, there's people out there that care about you. If you're in crisis, do not be afraid to reach out and ask for help. It is not a sign of weakness. No one is going to look at you as any lesser of a person because of it. The resources are there. Please use them.
Mm-hmm. And that this isn't a rational decision that is being made, right, Lisa? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is something where we're trying to help people not make a terrible mistake.
Right, and there's other ways to address pain rather than to end your life. And there's people who are willing to walk with you in that pain and care about you enough that they want to see you live and live well.
Right. Mm-hmm. We're not saying the pain isn't real, but we're saying that there's ways to deal with it, and that and the pain always ends, right? There's always like a better day beyond, which you may not be able to see at the moment.
Well, yes, there is, and it may not be tomorrow, and it may not be the next day. It may be a few days down the road, but people will walk with you through that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. Well, check out our website if you want more information. Outdoor hometown. I'm sorry, I do too many shows around here. Go to alaskapublic.org and look at today's show, Efforts to Address Suicide in Alaska. There's also a crisis line, 877-266-4357. My guests today were Dennis Lasley, board chair of the Alaska Center of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and Lisa Terwilliger, UAA Dean of Students Care Team. My name is Charles Wolforth. Our producer today was Dave Waldron. Kathleen McCoy will be with you next week as your host on Hometown Alaska. Thanks for listening.
Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.